Yeah.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Lavender Fix podcast. I am your host, Sabreen Hazik, and I am having a full-blown fangirl moment today. Why? Well, today's guest is someone I never, ever, 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 ever thought I could have on the show. Truly out of my league and so stunning. So listen up. I have the very first woman with alopecia to be featured in the Sports Illustrated magazine. She is none other than Christy Valdeseri. Yup. Talk about breaking the glass ceiling, smashing the bizarre beauty norms. And if you guys remember, a few months ago, I had released an episode with my very good friend, Sydney Wimeth, who had shared how Christy played a pivotal role in her journey to developing a positive outlook after she was diagnosed with alopecia. And from that very day, I had a voice inside my head telling me that I had to try and get Christy on the show. And here we are. So to tell you guys a little bit more about Christy, she is a dancer, a model, a fitness instructor, a motivational speaker, founder of Balturage, and the list goes on. Today, we learn more about Christy's journey to embracing her natural self and all the ups and downs that came with it. Hello, Christy. Thank you for joining me. How's it going?
Oh, I'm so happy to be here, Sabreen. It's going well. I'm loving that I'm starting my Saturday morning talking to you, since you are so wonderful, and I'm excited that you want to hear my story.
Yeah, and you're like my girl crush, so what better way to start my Saturday, right? So, Christy, you know, I mean, I'm going to have a hard time containing my excitement, so you will probably notice little bursts of throughout the episode, but I'll try and contain it a little bit. You are on the hot seat today, and I have lots of questions for you about your remarkable journey. So here we go. So Christy, what was life like 4 years ago? What defined Christy? What was she like?
Wow, good question. So 4 years ago, I was right out of college, and I was in a way different place than I am now, like mentally, emotionally, and literally physically. Mm-hmm. What defined me and what was I like? I think what defined me was, well, I was in a sorority like probably 5 years ago. So being like in the top, one of the top sororities, like that, I felt like had a lot of pressure on me. Mm-hmm. Defined me also was like what job I was booking, who I was dating, like the exterior stuff. And I feel like I was young and unexperienced and mm-hmm. probably not as empathetic and in tune with myself as I am today.
Right. Yeah, I mean, everything you said, first of all, I'm pretty sure you were always empathetic. Just that's your personality. I refuse to believe that you were ever not empathetic. So, all right.
So I agree, but you know, going through something just brings, mm-hmm. I feel like I'm so much more aware of mm-hmm. other people's struggles now because I have my own personal struggle that not everybody right. knows about. So yeah. I agree. I hope I was, but you know, life happens and you grow up a little bit. So yeah. Looking back, I'm like, I don't know how I was back then.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And I mean, well, of course, you know that today we're getting real and raw, right? We're talking about alopecia. And I remember going through your website when I was doing my research, basically means I was talking to you. But your website reads from blonde to bald to bold, right? And that to me was very powerful. We've talked about what life was like in the blonde period, as you just described, right? How did the transition to bald happen? And when did you first notice that something was amiss? Or I don't even want to say amiss, that something was different.
Right. Good question. Yeah, so it was right after I graduated. My hair started to fall out. I found like a little tiny bald patch and it started to fall out. But the real transition from blonde to bald was not for another like year and a half, maybe 2 years after that initial bald patch, because I hid under a wig. So I had blonde hair for all these years and then it started to fall out. And when it got really bad, I just glued on a blonde wig and pretended I was still that same person. As I was when I had hair. So the real transition really didn't happen until I like took the leap of and opened up about it and shared my story. But yeah, I first noticed that something was different when it was truly like 3 weeks after I graduated college and I had a little tiny patch on my head. Yeah.
And I mean, that's such a vulnerable stage in your life in general, right?
Yeah.
As women, we're so overly conscious, or at least made too conscious about the way we look, right? And of course, graduating, that is another very important stage where you're looking forward to doing more and more and more with your life, right?
Right.
So Christy, in our discovery call, you talked a lot about being in denial almost when you first kind of saw that small patch with a voice in your head saying that, you know, this can't and won't happen to me. Why do you think that was? Do you think that you were trying to see the glass half full, or was it because, you know, was it a form of escapism?
Yeah, wow. I really did believe that when it first started to fall out. I was really like, oh, this is nothing. This is going to go away. No way. Like, truly, I believed in my heart, no way this is going to happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was just a form of like feeling invincible. Like when you grow up and like don't experience much trauma or pain or loss. And then you're in your, and then you're 22, 23 and something's happening to you. I feel like for my whole life, I had a very like plain and simple, had a good family base. I went to college. Like, I feel like I had a very grounded life. And then when something starts to happen, I felt invincible. So I was like, no chance this is ever going to happen to me, because I had never experienced any sort of pain in this sense before.
Right.
So I would like to believe that I was looking at it with the glass half full, but because that's how I am. So I'm sure that was a part of it, but
yeah.
I also believe a big part was feeling invincible and feeling untouchable. Like I'm like kind of too good for this to happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm being real about it, yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, in your last answer, you were also talking about, you know, the real transition didn't really happen when I first noticed the spot, right? It was, I believe, after you moved to New York in pursuit of your dream, which was you participated in a dance program, right? And you were losing your hair with kind of each passing day. So what was going through your mind every time you found a new bald spot on your head? You know, did it make this reality set in? And also talk to us a little bit more about this dance program that you were a part of.
Yeah. So I had just moved to New York and I'm from like outside Philly, so East Coast. After college, I went to Penn State and I was in this intense dance program that we took like, I think 12 classes a week. I had to be there at like 8 a.m. and I was commuting like 2 hours. It was a whole thing. I was living in Jersey and it was intense, and it was all about like these mock auditions where we had to do our hair, have our hair done, our makeup done, our outfits on, like, and it was really like launching me into my professional career. And while I'm like, this is like the first time in the dance industry, in the entertainment industry, like I just got out of college and my hair's falling out. So it felt like every day when I would take these showers and I would cry my eyes out in the shower because chunks of hair were falling out. I just remember, you asked if reality set in. I don't really think it did yet. I was just doing everything like to keep my head above water. It felt like I was drowning in everything. And I was going through a really bad relationship at the time. I was going through a breakup. Yeah. And I just felt like I couldn't even like fully address what was going on with my health, because I was like in a new environment, doing this intense dance program in a bad relationship, and my hair's falling out. So I was just like trying to swim, it felt like, to keep my head above water. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and not to forget that these are all stressors that probably contribute to getting worse. So now, since you were in a program that obviously, you know, my understanding of, you know, dance squads or being in a program is that you are required to look a certain way, prim and proper, with makeup and hair done perfectly. So did you ever feel this unnerving pressure to conform? You know, were you comparing yourself to other women around you?
Let's take a quick break.
Hey guys, it's Joel from Momentous Experience here. How are you going? If you listen to people that I catch up with here and around the world talking about their mental health, the challenges they face, and how they've managed it. It's all about spreading awareness and promoting a peaceful and balanced life. So join me again, Momentous Experience, on Spotify, Apple, and Google.
Yeah. And now looking back, I am such a different person than I was during that program. I did think that being blonde is beautiful and that's what will book me and that is my identity. And I have to have this blonde, curly, big, beautiful hair. And yeah, of course, in the moment, I was avoiding the reality of what was happening to me. I was like, oh, this, I have to have this blonde hair. I have to figure it out. I have to hide the patches so I can still be blonde. I totally felt like I had the pressure to conform because it was what I was surrounded by and it's all I knew. It came from being in this like top fun sorority where everybody was beautiful and hot. And I felt like pressure in that sense before I even lost my hair, that I was like, I identified myself as this girl in the sorority with a blonde and being outgoing and bubbly and all that. And then I go right into this program that's the same thing that I felt like I had to be a certain way. And was I comparing myself 1 trillion times over? And I, even in the past 4 years since then, in auditions and different jobs and whatnot, for dance or modeling, it's a natural thing. I feel like I'm getting better at it because I'm in a different place. But for so long, I would go to these auditions, and sometimes I had patches, just patches on my head, and I wore no wig, and I would look around and everybody has this like luscious, beautiful hair. They're talented, they're tall, they're thin. Like, so of course, if I was in an audition with 350 other women and they look like from the outside, they have it all. And I'm here struggling with this thing that I love and that I want and that identified me, and I'm losing it. It's so much pressure, and it's so easy to compare when it's in front of your face all the time. Yes.
Right. Of course. And
it's such a visual thing. Hair is like, you can't miss someone's hair. Like, you see it first thing when you see somebody. It's not like something that's a little bit more hidden.
Yeah. I mean, No, you're right. And I think when you're dealing with something of that sort, even if it's not something you notice before, it is something you notice when you're dealing with something that targets that specific part of your body, right? So if I remember one of my colleagues was recently diagnosed with cancer, and I started experiencing phantom pain, which is in the exact same area. And, you know, it's just, we internalize a lot of these things. And so it's a very natural part of life. And yeah, I hear you. I mean, it's hard. And so, Christy, what were your parents, you know, what was going through their mind, especially when they saw that you were experiencing this thing that they probably also had no idea about, right? So did they have any advice for you in the beginning phase? What was going on?
Yeah, and I talk a lot with parents and moms now in my hair loss community, and it's a whole traumatizing experience for a mom or even a dad to witness, because as a parent, you want to protect and fix and help and heal and all of that. And you can do nothing except just be there for your child. So my parents were trying, like in the beginning when I was living in New York, they were trying to help me figure out my insurance, to find a dermatologist. You know, when you're initially something's happening with your health or you know, your look, you are doing everything to save it and protect it and keep it from happening. rather than just being like, oh, it's fine, it's gonna fall out, you know. That's the initial human reaction, to be like, why is this happening? I need, like, everybody I talked to went through the phase of finding a dermatologist, getting steroid shots. So they were helping me try to figure out what I can do to fix it. And then I remember when I had lost almost all of it, probably, like, it was falling out right at this point, like falling crazy, almost to the point that it was gone. I remember my mom just telling me, I think it just needs to all fall out so it can grow back. And I'm like, okay, I'll believe that. Like, let's just believe that. Hold on to any sort of hope that we possibly can. And then I remember another time I, like, totally lost it. I had a whole breakdown. I had just been fired from a job and I was at my parents' house, and I was just having a whole meltdown, bawling my eyes out. And my dad came in and was finally like, all right, let's do something proactive. Like, let's look into it, your diet or what you're eating, or like, let's go, like, balls to the wall, for a lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And like, do what we can to help you. Like, I'm going to research it. And he was just like, I remember him walking into the room and trying to calm me down and being like, we're going to do everything we can right now to fix this.
Right.
And it's weird to look back on, because a lot of these parents talk about now, like, fixing something is implying in turn that something's broken. And right. And so, of course, back, that's the initial reaction. But now I think I have a little bit different perspective on it after growing and going through this the past 4 years.
Yeah.
But yeah. My parents are amazing and so, so, so supportive of me.
Yeah, no, I mean, that is phenomenal. And it's such an important part of your journey, right? Because if you are dealing with something like that, and on top of that, you don't have a good support system, I'm pretty sure that it amplifies the impact of the condition, right? So when would you say, Christy, was kind of like the tipping point for you, which is when you thought, okay, we need medical intervention? Because I have been trying to convince myself that this this can't happen to me, but I'm pretty sure that there was a point where you were like, nope, something needs to be done about this.
Yeah, that's when I was in New York. I don't think I was as freaked out as a lot of people are when they're experiencing this, because I had my hands full with, like I said, the relationship, moving cities, being in the dance program. But I did, when I was in New York, go to a dermatologist, and she was just like shocked that how much hair was falling out. And I was just sitting in the chair being like, I don't care what it is, diagnose me with whatever you want to call it, I need a solution. I don't care what the name of the condition, what can I do right now to get my hair back? And so but then push forward probably like 8 months, when I was fired from a job, my hair, like I said, fell out so quickly. And that's when I was like, oh, this is happening. I have to, like, I didn't accept it, of course, but I had to, like, take a second and be like, okay, this is about to be my new reality for a second. I like turned to gluing a wig on, because that truly saved me, because I could look in the mirror and still have hair. But yeah, it was like, it's a whole roller coaster of emotions when something like this is happening.
Yeah. And I mean, let's be honest, as human beings, we have a tendency to overthink. I mean, I know that when I'm feeling sick out of the blue, I will search the web, and Christy, I will diagnose myself with all kinds of weird diseases, like I'm dying. So did you have any WebMD episodes blasting the internet with alopecia-related searches?
Oh my gosh, Sabrine, yes. Like, literally, yes. Like, I don't know how my phone didn't break every time I typed in alopecia. But I remember so vividly being in this dance program, and in between classes, like, I just had like a jazz or hip hop class. And then I remember like 15 minutes before my ballet class. And I was just sitting there, and I would do this like every single day, every single second I had an off moment. I had like a downtime, I would go on Google and look up alopecia. What causes it? How do I stop it? How do I fix it? Why is it happening? Literally everything under the sun I would look up. And you're right, the website or the internet is a crazy place that it could really mess with your mind.
Right.
But I did that non-stop. Non-stop.
Yeah. And I mean, during COVID, I've had so many friends who refuse to go for a test, but they are diagnosing themselves. I'm like, listen, just go take the test. You know, it'll drive you bonkers. Right.
It can calm your mind.
Yeah, exactly. So now, you know, you went to the doctor and you were like, I need a solution. So what came out of that consultation? You know, I typically know that one of the first kind of topical treatments, or, you know, they give you creams or sometimes shampoo, or they give you steroid shots. So what was it like for you?
Yeah, I just remember that doctor being so like taken aback by how much hair I had fallen out, and it didn't feel well. It didn't feel good to see this doctor react that way. Right? Like, can you have a little bit more sensitivity? Like, I'm absolutely freaking out inside, and for you to have the same reaction doesn't feel good. So she like kind of thought that, she threw out the word alopecia and was like, you're losing a lot really fast, but I think that it's alopecia. She's like, we could do these steroid shots, and like gave me all this information to read. And she talks about like, I think like a blood, I forget what it's called, but something else that could like
help.
I don't remember exactly. Yeah. Help. But, and so I ended up doing the steroid shots. I remember I got like 30 shots in my head, and then I had to rush off to this rehearsal. I remember so vividly, rush off to this rehearsal and just like act like everything's good, turn on, be on for this, learning new choreo and prepping for this show. And I was just beside myself, and the shots hurt. I mean, 30 shots in your head, like, why is that a thing? No one should ever get that. But it did help initially. My hair kind of did grow. Who knows what it was from, if it was from the shots or it was from like me trying to handle and cope with my stress. I don't know what it was from. You know, you don't really know, but it did kind of grow back. I had a lot of regrowth, but clearly didn't help enough, because if you're looking at me right now, I'm bald, you know?
Yeah, no, I hear that. And it's kind of unpredictable also, because it's, you know, an autoimmune thing, right? So it's really not in your control, but there are ways, or there are things, or at least perception, you can try and focus on mindset shift, right, which really helps, which I think alopecia or no alopecia, all of us need to do that, because we all have insecurities.
Exactly.
Right. And I mean, I'm the one thing that I'm really surprised about, Christy, is, you know, you talked about your doctor responding in a very strange way. And every single person I've spoken with who has gone for a first time consultation, you know, before they got their, diagnosis, their doctors have, I don't know, like, these doctors need to be put in straight jackets.
They need to go through something. That's what it is.
What's
they need to
happening?
Go through something. Like, I know. Oh, I know. It makes me really, really, really infuriates me, because I am so resistant to go to the doctor for anything because of my past experiences with doctors. It, like, you're already going through so much inside.
And
so,
to
like,
top it off,
the doctor. Yeah, like, the doctor needs to give you some hope and be like way more sensitive. If you're going to be in the field, like, figure it out, have some sensitivity and some heart. Every doctor that's listening to this, truly, like, you need to be sensitive to people who are going through stuff.
Really odd.
I feel strongly about that.
It's really odd that every single person I've spoken with has in some form or capacity shared that with me. Okay. So,
but in turn, I have a back injury right now, and I have an amazing doctor. So feels like it's everyone's doctor, but I have an amazing female doctor right now that is just like walking me through this back injury and telling me I'm going to be okay. And she's amazing. Mm-hmm. So I have found some gems. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. I mean, but it's the alopecia specialists we're talking about they need to
Let's buck up.
Yeah. So, Christy, you know, you had mentioned, I was going through a lot of the content on your site, and you just shared that, you know, you were going through a really rough time in your life amid dealing with alopecia. You were in a toxic relationship, hustling to make ends meet. So, I'm curious to know, how did your boyfriend at the time respond to, you know, you experiencing hair loss? Was there any kind of support coming in from there at all?
So I was living in New York when it happened, and he was still in college. Okay. And yeah, this question, looking back, I'm like, he was cheating on me. So he had a lot on his plate because of what he was doing. Yeah. I mean, he was like, he like noticed it was falling out and was like kind of felt for me, but I wouldn't say it was any sort of like support that needs to be rewarded. Like he was just wrapped up in his own shit, to be honest, looking back. Yeah, I mean, I would say he was there to an extent, being the situation that we were in and the point of our relationship we were in, but nothing like I have, not the kind of support I have today, but he was aware. And it's kind of, because of the point of our relationship, he was cheating on me. Like, I was so stressed. I had so much anxiety. And so it feels like that's kind of why my hair loss started, because of the anxiety and stress I was under. So I wouldn't say it was the best support. No.
Yeah.
But it was what it was for where the situation I was at.
Right.
We were at in my life. Yeah.
Yeah. And you, I remember, like, when we started out with this episode, you talked about, you know, taking showers being the worst part of your day after you came back from rehearsals, and that you almost felt like you were bubbly to the outside world, but almost miserable in solitude, right? So tell us why. Tell us why you felt that way.
Oh, that's really sad, but it's so true. I was so bubbly and outgoing and happy and put on this whole thing. I mean, that is my natural self, but you're right. When in solitude, when I was by myself and and taking showers at the end of the day, I was so sad. Like, I was just beside myself. I can, like, still picture the shower I was in my New Jersey apartment, coming home at the end of the day, and just chunks and chunks of hair. And it was so upsetting, but I didn't know what to do, because, like, I would cry and yell and scream to my parents, but on the phone, but nothing I like said or did was going to fix it, you know? So I just kind of like feel like I internalized and like released in the showers and alone in my apartment, because there was nothing I could do or say or amount of anger or tears that were going to fix it. So I was just like, that's how I was coping with it. Just releasing all of this angst that was built up by myself in my shower in my apartment.
Yeah.
Because it's really hard to see something happening to your body that you have no control over and no answers. And I'm dealing with 1,000 other things. So this was just like another thing that was ruining me at the time.
Right. And I mean, obviously the steroid injections were not working, right? And so the one thing that really stayed with me that you had shared with me earlier was you found this place called the Hair Club. Can you share more about how that visit came into being, what happened, and what is Hair Club, you know, why you went there and what happened there? Can you also shed a little light on the cost aspect of things?
Yeah, I got you. So Hair Club the original name was Hair Club for Men, which I hate because enough women need it as well. But yeah, it kind of goes by Hair Club now, but it's a company that you can go get hair pieces, and they have like all these different programs. And I did initially, when my hair started falling out, they would do like a laser and massages and all this stuff in New York to help it grow. I did go there in New York, so that could have also been contributing to why it was growing back on top of the steroid shots. But when it all fell out, when I was like 90% hair loss gone, I went there and got a wig glued on. So they have different programs. And this program I was now stepping into was, they literally, Sabrina, around the perimeter of your head, they put this really intense glue and then they stick a wig on and they're like, all right, we'll see you in 4 weeks. And you go about your whole life. So at the time, right now I would never do that, but at the time it truly like saved me and helped me, because to go from like having hair and then 3 weeks later, like not having hair, and then having to look in the mirror and see that, like, no, it was way too hard. So this at the time was perfect for me. I would shower, work out, swim, like everything you name it, with this wig on, glued on.
Wow.
And yeah, so it definitely helped me. I was paying like a little over $400 a month. Okay. Just to have hair. And then I came out to LA. When I moved to LA, the the people at the LA center out here were not like the connection I had. I'm still friends with the people that helped me in New York on Facebook.
Right.
And out here, it was just a different situation. They did some, who the hell even knows what it was? They did some examination of my scalp and told me that my hair follicles are dead and then it's never going to grow back. And like, why are you telling me that? Like, what? That's not helping me at all to put that on my mind and tell me that. And my hair ended up did growing in and then fell out again, but it did grow and it grows still today. I shave it every day. So they were wrong about that. And that goes back to people in the medical world, like giving people prognoses or situations like this. Like, you actually don't know. So stop putting that a negative thing like that in my head, because the mind has a lot of power. But yeah, it was good for what it was. And I would get a new wig every like 3 months. And then I would go in every 4 weeks and they would take off my wig, wash my head, and then re-glue it. And I remember I would turn my chair away from the mirror because when they took it off, I like couldn't handle looking at myself in the mirror. And that's really upsetting, but that's the truth of how I was feeling at the time.
So this place is there also like there's a therapy aspect to it also, where they give you treatment, but then also glue a wig on your head?
Yeah, they can do treatment if you just have like slight hair loss, what I had in the beginning. So not like treatment as in like massaging your head, laser therapy on your head, washing it with a certain shampoo, but they don't do that when you have full hair loss. Like when you're fully bald, like me, they don't do that, which I don't know, maybe they should, but they do it when it's like slightly falling out. So then it turns into gluing wigs on. Well, at least anyway, it did for me.
Gotcha. Wow, that is expensive.
I know. And meanwhile, I'm looking around like, well, all these other people have hair on their head for free and I have to pay $400 just to have the hair on my head. So it's a whole experience of anger and feeling bitter about the situation. I was so angry for so many years because like, why? It felt like, why me? Why me? And I couldn't escape it because it's a constant. Hair loss doesn't go away. It's there 24/7, 365, every single second of every single day.
So did you keep up with Hair Club for a long time, or did you decide to drop the service?
So I switched locations out here because I couldn't deal with the man working at this one that was telling me my hair would never grow and having no sensitivity. I switched to another location out in LA and they were great. They were nice. It wasn't like my New York fam back there, but they were great for what it was. And then I used to just get wigs consistently. And now it's kind of not because of COVID, but I did get wigs a lot through them. I wouldn't go in and get them glued on anymore. I would just get the wigs and then I just wear them without glue.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
And, you know, your parents were obviously going through this experience with you, right? I mean, all these different transitions and trials. And so did their response to the situation change, especially as as it got worse, the condition got worse?
Honestly, no. And I'm kind of grateful that they kind of stayed level-headed. When it got worse, it fell all the way out. And I was like, I had just been fired from a job and I was like, what do I do? And I'm just like day in and day out thinking, what do I do? What do I do? And I was like, all right, mom and dad, something in me is telling me, you know, we're from Philly. I'm like, something's in me is telling me to move to Los Angeles. And they could have been like, oh God, no, like you're 23, your hair just fell out. Like you have to stay here. And they were like, we support you. We know you're going to be okay. They like reassured me that like, I got this. And that's, looking back, that's such a beautiful thing, because if they were like, didn't believe in me or didn't have my back or support me, moving across the country, amidst going through a breakup, losing a job and losing my hair, I probably wouldn't have succeeded as well as I did because I didn't have them in my corner, like telling me like, no, you're going to be good. You got this. So I really, really am grateful for that. Thinking about it now, I haven't really thought about that, but they really they knew in their heart that I have this like drive and determination that I'm always going to be okay. So they believed in me, and that I'm really happy to be able to look back on that and think that.
Right. And I mean, you know, like you mentioned, you were already going through a lot. What were some of the confidence breakers in your mind, especially, you know, because you're also in a career where, unfortunately, there is just a lot of pressure to, you know, especially, I think, on women to fit into almost this cookie cutter beauty standard, right? So did alopecia ever make you feel less feminine or attractive, or how was that like?
Yeah, there was a lot of confidence breakers. Every time I would go really anywhere in my career field, whether it was a dance class, an audition, a casting, I always felt like I was like a little ashamed. Like I wouldn't hold my head that high because I had this wig on and I can only do so much, only so much styling, only so many head whips in a wig.
Yeah.
So I couldn't like fully express and fully be my complete self because I had this thing weighing over me. And what you asked if alopecia ever made me feel less feminine or attractive, and like 1000%, like I still have days like that. I mean, when you have hair, the whole world has taught us to believe that hair is beautiful, and there's like different cultures that there's so much around there's so much power in hair, and I hate it, but that's the reality. And yeah, sometimes when I just want to feel like feminine and girly and sometimes like myself, I wear a wig because I knew myself for 23 years. It's not like I lost my hair at 9 or at 4 and don't really remember. I know what it feels like to have hair. And maybe as I'm bald for longer years, more time, I will not really remember that or feel like myself with a wig on, but I still feel feminine and like myself when I wear my wig. And a lot of women in my community don't feel that way. They feel more like themselves without their wig. So it's interesting because I remember that, and I'm still working through it. It's not like it's, I just opened up about my story and it's fine. Right. I still have days where I don't feel attractive or pretty because I'm bald. But I also tell myself that everybody has an insecurity. If I had hair, it wouldn't fix everything, you know? I'm sure would have 100%, other insecurities.
100%. Right. Yeah. I mean, honestly, every single day I have an issue with something. Every single day. It's almost like...
Right.
Yeah. So
having hair doesn't fix it, right?
Exactly. It doesn't. You think that this will fix it, and if I was a tad a bit taller or this and that. So it doesn't really... Yeah, I agree with you. Now, you know, correlating femininity and, feeling attractive, I think it also has... One is obviously for yourself, right? For your self-confidence. The other thing also is, let's be honest, we're always concerned about the opposite sex. We are. Right. Or the same sex, depending on your orientation. Right. So what about the world of dating? How did you operate with authenticity there? Did you have any odd experiences, bad dates?
Yeah, well, when I first came out here and I was wearing a wig and no one knew, this is like going back, I was seeing this guy and he like knew something was up, but he didn't know. And I wasn't on my Instagram like it is now. It was not out there. Okay. He knew something was up with me. Like he knew that I was kind of holding back something, and he actually was bald himself, but we never really talked about it. But he like kind of had this whole thing that he was lost his hair, not to alopecia, just from being a guy, I guess.
Okay.
And, yeah, he was like in his early 30s, so he was losing his hair, I guess, from that. But he like knew, and I was so afraid to tell him. Oh my God, I was so afraid to tell him. And it's funny because like you can only hide a wig for so long. When you're intimate with someone, like they're gonna find out.
Yeah.
So I remember the day I told him, and he was like so insanely supportive and awesome. His reaction was awesome. And I'm grateful. Even the past up until now, I have not had anyone make me feel any sort of way about it. I always tell people, when people ask about advice with dating, like it's one thing to to tell someone, like if I'm seeing somebody and I tell them, oh, I'm wearing a wig, even though they've seen my Instagram, I'm sure like now a lot of people have seen my Instagram prior to us dating, which I kind of am grateful for. Like, look at all that. So you kind of get like what I'm about and then we'll meet. So it's kind of a blessing, but it's really different to just say, oh yeah, I'm wearing a wig, I'm bald, to say that, but to do the action of taking it off in front of someone, like, whoa, that is like two different worlds mm-hmm. of emotions just to say it rather than to like physically feel, show them with hair and then to take it off. But I just try to listen to how I'm feeling. I don't like push myself
sure,
to
yeah.
go without my wig. Yeah, I just kind of
that's
try to
awesome.
Stay authentic to how I'm feeling. Yeah.
That's awesome. And that takes a lot of time. It doesn't just happen overnight.
Exactly.
Right? You learn to embrace yourself slowly.
Yep.
Now, let's actually talk about 2017 for a second. And the reason I say that is because, you know, you've talked about a couple of times about losing your job, like that you got fired, right? And this, from
yeah.
my understanding, was sort of your dream job. But the experience was the exact opposite because you were fired, right? So personally, I was really shocked when you first told me what had happened. But can you share with our listeners what really happened and why you were fired?
Let's take a quick break.
Hi, Denise Hamilton-Mace here, host of the Low No Drinker podcast, your place to go to meet the people and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. Every week, I speak to brand founders like Carl Anthony Brown from CrossFit Non-Alcoholic Spirits and ex-MasterChef finalist Billy Wright from Descent 10% Gin. Industry experts like Hamish Renton in our chat about how the fat jabs will impact low and no drinkers. And I help you answer questions like what the heck is the difference between non-alcoholic and alcohol-free anyways. This podcast is for you if you're looking for a fun and informative way to explore a life less intoxicated with no judgment or expectation. Check out the link in the description or find me at lownodrinkermagazine.com.
Yeah, you said it exactly right, Sabrine. Like, it was my dream job at the time. I had grown up going on cruises with my family, and I was in the place in my life that I was like, I was going through this breakup and I was like, finally ended it with him. And I was single and I was trying to focus on myself and all that. And I'm like, I want to book a cruise job. I want to book a cruise job. And what do you know? I booked a cruise job and I was like, oh, I'm smooth sailing from here. I'm single. I'm now going to focus on myself. I'm going to go on this cruise. My hair is going to grow back. I'm never even going to say the word alopecia again. Boom. I got on went through the rehearsals, got on the ship, was like on cloud nine. I loved my castmates. We're traveling the world, making money. It's my first job in my career or in my industry out of college. I was absolutely ecstatic, like on cloud nine. Like, I can't even express it enough how much I was like loving it. And then what do you know? I got fired out of the blue because this one man in corporate America, like it's freaking truth, you know, had way too much power. And he said, I want her off before Oprah comes on the ship. I saw all the emails and he said, I stood out and I drew attention and I will never know why, because this asshole never answered my phone calls, emailed me back. I've never spoken to him from that. And I was told by a member in my cast, my company manager was like my really good friend. And he told me, and I remember I was in absolute shock. And then I was like in his room and when he told me with my two other friends, I thought he was kidding. Truly. I thought he was kidding. Like, Sabrine, I was on this ship making friends with all the people in the cafeteria, people talking to guests in the elevator. Like, I was just like, felt like I was doing my job above and beyond, because that's my personality, to be welcoming and friendly to everybody. So I was just doing my job above and beyond. When I spoke with other people who also were authoritative people, they were shocked. They were like, we have no idea why this is happening. We think you're an amazing performer. We love watching you. We're so confused. And I like fought for my life that day when I was fired. They tried to kick me off that night. And I was like, fought them. I'm like, my parents are out of town. Like, where are you going to send me? Obviously I was lying, but I was like, I cannot be sent out today. They were trying to send me out. They told me that morning they were trying to send me out that night. And then, of course, I talked them out of it, and they sent me out at 6 a.m. the next morning. I was kicked off the ship.
Oh, my gosh.
And I've never seen some of my cast members again. That was my, like, oh, it was so sad. It was such a low point in my life. I remember sitting on, I had just gotten off the ship in Seattle, and I was sitting on a hill with, like, five of my bags. My cast mates just, we all got brunch together. They got off the ship. We all got brunch together. And then they had to go back on the ship. And I remember seeing them get in the Uber. And oh my God, I can remember it so vividly, and waving to them. And I was just bawling my eyes out, like 2,500 miles from my family. Just got fired for God knows what. Like, I stood out. That's all I know. And now I'm like, great. My hair is about to fall out. Like, there's no tomorrow because of the stress I'm under right now. And I was just so upset. And it was a horrible experience. And I don't care what you do, who you are. No one deserves to feel the way that I felt.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It was so sad. It was really, really sad thinking back. Like, no one deserves that. It was really, really hard. And then, like I said, 3 weeks from that, my hair was absolutely gone because of that trauma and stress.
Yeah. Well, of course, we know that you're unstoppable, clearly. We all know that about you. You know, you picked back up from that experience and you were like, okay, screw this. I am going to continue living my life. And that is when you moved to LA after the cruise ship experience, right? So can you talk to me a little bit about, you know, how that happened? You decided to go. And then I also remembered you had shared with me that you glued a wig on and you left for LA. So what was that like?
Yeah. So when I got home from the cruise, thank God I had somewhere to go. You know, people probably don't have like family houses to go back to. So thank God. I always like to say that because I am grateful that I moved out of my apartment in New York. So I had my parents' place to go back to, which was amazing. And for, I think it was like probably like a month and a half, I was just waking up every day like, what do? I have no direction. I have no job. I have no relationship. I have just about no hair. I have no place to live, no like place for myself to live. I was like, what do I do? And something in me just kept coming up, LA, in my mind and my heart. And I'm so grateful that I listened to that and I had the support to do it. And yeah, like you said, I glued on the wig. I'm like, I'm going to just continue to be this blonde girl that I was. I glued on a wig, booked a one way to LA on August 22nd, 2017. I had no job, no apartment. I knew one girl out here and I stayed with her when I came out here. And I was like, I'm just going to figure it out. I had a small bank account and I was like, I'm just going to figure it out. And I found an apartment. You know, it's always going to work out. When there's a will, there's a way. And I so live by that. And yeah, I never looked back. I've lived out here for 3.5 years now. And it's one of the best decisions I've ever made.
Wow. So clearly things turned out the way that you had expected. Right. So in LA, did alopecia kind of come in the way of you getting quality gigs?
Yeah. Well, it's, that's a good question. I mean, a lot of it was because I was wearing a wig at first. So I was like fitting in as a blonde, but
yeah.
I don't even know if it was so necessarily like that simple that it was like alopecia was getting in the way of gigs. It was like my own insecurity and like my own, I couldn't be myself. I couldn't fully express. I couldn't fully like live and like be Christy. Like I just couldn't because of this weight I was carrying and the hiding and the stress of people can tell it's a wig. Is it going to fall off? Is it going to get in my face? Like, so I think all of the emotions around it were more holding me back from thriving in my career, to be honest. And sometimes I'm like, wow, not everybody experiences this kind of turmoil in their early 20s when they're trying to like set down the groundwork for their career. But yeah, I think it was a lot had to do with my emotions at the time of what I was dealing with.
Right. And, you know, now let's talk a little bit about, you know, you talk a lot about insecurities. So let's talk about the person who helped you address your biggest insecurity and convinced you to take your wig off and embrace your natural self. What was that experience like? And how did you eventually tell all your friends what you were experiencing? Yeah.
Oh, that makes me smile thinking back to that. I did a a little dance intensive for like 5 days with a heels teacher out here in LA. And the first day, again, no one knew, only my close friends and family, but I had made a video with my brother. He's a videographer. I made a video with him like 4 months or 5 months prior back in our hometown. And, but I just sat on it. Like I like edited it, but I didn't put it out. I just sat on it until I was ready. And it was a dance video of me taking my wig off. So at this intensive, the teacher was like, okay, everybody go around and we're all going to say what our biggest insecurity is. Oh my God, Sabrine, my heart was like hitting Mars. Like it was absolutely beating out of my chest. And when it got to me, I just completely broke down and started crying in front of like 15 other women. And I was like, well, my biggest insecurity is my hair loss. I'm completely bald and I wear wigs. And no, everybody was shocked, but so supportive. And then by the end of the week, she talked me into dancing without my wig on. And wow, that was an amazing moment that I never thought I could do. Like, I remember coming home and telling my roommate and we were like, oh, that's like a big ask. Like, I don't know about all that. That's a lot. Yeah. And I did it. And I'm so grateful I did it. And then about a month later, it was Alopecia Awareness Month, which is September. And I picked a date that literally was a date that like I was free and my roommate was free because she's my best friend. I wanted her to come.
Yeah.
And I rented a studio, invited everybody I knew in LA. So I'd been there for like a year and I invited like probably like 30 people that I knew that were my friends. And most of them had known because I was slowly, I always tell people who ask me how to open up about it. I slowly started to tell people, my coworkers, my friends, my family, like different people in my life. I would slowly tell them and I would look at their reaction, and the reactions were always beautiful. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, I'm having everybody in one place. I'm doing this. You know, I don't know how to do anything low key. So I made this like a whole ass day. I rented a studio. Everybody came. I like taught a workout class. And then I sat there and talked out loud to everything that I had been through to that point and took my wig off for the first time in front of everybody. And it was just such a celebratory day. And now it's like a holiday for my hair loss community. It's called, it's 9/26, September 26th. And I host events on it every year.
Oh my God. It's
just like the day that I call it like the day that I turn bold, because you only turn bold once. Cause once it's out there and you're like now like dubbed that you're bold. And I think it's a beautiful thing to celebrate and to acknowledge every year. And I'm so grateful for that day that I was able to, I had the courage to do it.
That is monumental that you have a day.
That is my just... roommate jokes. She's like, you literally made like a national holiday for all your community.
That is freaking amazing. I mean, I had no idea.
Girl.
I had no idea. Like, this is just...
Oh, it's... And the date I had tattooed on my body, 9/26. So I'm like, this day is never going away.
Oh,
tattooed on me.
It's here to stay. It's here to stay. All right. So now let's get to the best estest piece, which is the Sports Illustrated magazine cover. How did that happen? How did you feel when you found out? How did the shoot go? Give us everything, Christy.
Yeah, wow. That was another like turning point in my life and my career. I remember seeing they do like an open audition for a quick rundown of how it went down. They do like an open call where you submit a video. And I remember seeing it the year prior to doing it and thinking, like literally thinking in my head, there's no way I can do this until my hair grows all the way back, because my hair was growing in at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I'll do it next year. My hair will probably be back. And then of course life doesn't go as planned. It fell out again. My hair fell all the way out, after being like 85% back. And I was like, that's it. I'm doing it. I dragged my friend to the beach and he, made this whole video of me taking my wig off and talking about what I had been through. And next thing you know, I was invited down to Miami. And then the end of that weekend, I was walking on a runway and ripped my wig off in front of everybody. Probably like a couple hundred people. And then next thing you know, from 6 months after that, I found out I was going to be in SI as the first bald model ever.
Ah!
And it was yes to that reaction. That's exactly what it is, you know? And I did my shoot last February, so almost a year ago, the end of the month. And
crazy.
It was the best day of my life. Like, that was one of the best days of my life. I just felt so celebrated and acknowledged and heard and understood and loved for being exactly who I was. I didn't need to, like, it was never a thing of, oh, well, she doesn't need to go to hair because she doesn't have hair. Like, it was never talked about. It was right. Just like, it's Christy. And that's the first time in my life that it was just working with that SI, that it was just Christy. It wasn't, mm-hmm. I didn't feel the pressure to, like, well, should I wear my wig? Should I not? Like, I have to make this a thing. It was just like, this is me. This is who I am. It's not anything else. And gotcha. A lot of experiences, it's always in my career, it's like, I have to explain it. But the shoot was the best. I felt so beautiful and empowered and strong and badass and confident, like every positive yeah. word you can think of. That's how I felt. And then when the magazine came out, it's a whole nother experience to see it in real life. And another amazing day. I just was like, I remember crying, looking at it, being like, when there's a will, there's a way. If you have a vision and a dream, like, you got to keep going for it no matter what happens to you.
Yeah.
Because that's what I did. And it's so rewarding when you push through some bad stuff and get out on top, in a sense. It's so rewarding.
Yeah. I mean, and it went down in history. You know, you will always be yeah. the first woman to be, you know, featured in the Sports Illustrated Aww. Magazine. That is kick ass. Tell us about the time you ripped off your wig on the runway and how it made you feel. Because I know, like, I've almost seen that you are now becoming very comfortable with not wearing a wig. And obviously that, mm-hmm. you know, you must have gone through there must have been some deliberation, or, you know, the shoot probably also made you feel so much more comfortable in your own skin. So tell us about the time you ripped off your wig on the runway.
Yeah, you're so right about all of that you said. So it was in Miami, and me and the editor both had this idea, because I was like all about the wig rip off. And at the time, it's like such an iconic thing. So I walked on the runway, I'm like strutting my stuff, boom, 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 in a little bikini in front of so many people. And I ripped it off, and the crowd went wild. And I like strutted back like I owned the damn world. Like, everyone needs a moment like that. And I went backstage, and I was like, the dresser who was like trying to help me get ready for my next look was like trying to hustle me. And I just took a second, Sabrine, and I looked at myself in the mirror, and I had tears come to my eyes. And I was like, I just did that. Like, yeah. Wow, I just did that. And it was a moment of like, I rock. Like, I am like unstoppable. It just was such a moment of confidence. And I was right. so proud of myself to go through all of the BS that I went through, and the emotions and the feeling depressed and sad, and like my life and career was over and I can never be happy again, mm-hmm. to going to this moment and being like, it was like a screw you moment to everyone yeah. and the industry, the media, the world that makes you feel like you need to be a certain way to be accepted. It was like, yeah. screw you to all that. All in one. Like, you can tell I'm getting so hyped up, because
that is amazing. I love that.
Yeah, it was such a moment.
Was it pre-planned? Like, did the people behind the stage know that you were going to do that?
Yeah, me and the editor decided it. Nice. So it was known, but no one in the audience knew. So it was like a big
wow.
It was a shock, but everybody was about it. Like, it was yeah. such a uplifting, supportive.
Of course. I mean, experience. I had goose flesh when you were talking about your experience, because I know, like, it makes you feel so empowered. And I'm pretty sure, though, that, you know, a lot of the folks in, you know, especially agents and stuff like that, they're all still very mainstream and very averse to the idea of a woman, especially making the decision to. So did you, when you decided to finally say, you know what, I'm going to ditch the wig, but of course, still wearing it whenever you felt like it. How did that go well with the hiring agents?
So initially I went into my agent, I had a dance agent at the time, and I went into her before anything, like before I opened up about it. And I was like so nervous, and I wanted to tell her because it felt like it was weighing on me. I wanted to get someone else's perspective on it. Someone that's on the other side of it, like the talent, she's the agent. I kind of wanted to see. And I remember leaving that day feeling so unsatisfied. Mm-hmm. She was like, I don't know why she said this. Maybe she was just trying to look out for me, but I wanted someone to be like, yes, this is amazing. Push your story, be yourself, embrace who you are. And she was like, I was like, do you think I should get bald headshots? And she was like, I don't think that's needed yet. And I just left feeling so unfulfilled. And then I dropped their asses because I was like, this is not for me. I need someone to cheer me on. Like, not someone to hold me back. Like, I'm like really sensitive and not ready for this. So I need someone to push me, not someone to tell me the opposite. So
yeah, screw and that. You have to be the change you want to see. I mean, and actually speaking of change, you also, you know, one of the things you did recently, which I am so grateful to you for, is you drummed up a lot of opposition against this influencer on Instagram who created a video where she's pranking her mom with a shaved head. Right. Almost going back to the comment you had made that, you know, when you say that something needs to be fixed, you're implying that it's broken, and shaving your head by no means should be considered an abnormal thing. Right. We need to normalize it. Right. So tell me why it hit a nerve for you. What, you know, you clearly went out of your way and you proactively reached out to the influencer with no response, of course, which is unfortunate and very typical. But what happened?
Yeah, it really hit a nerve. One of my moms in my hair loss community, the Voltage, she sent me it and I was like, oh, this, she was really upset by it. Then I watched it and honestly, to be honest, I cried. I teared up about it because it really upset me. And then I, you know, posted and all that, but it hit a nerve because I work every single day to, first off, love myself. And then secondly, to show my little girls, I teach dance to little girls 2 times a week, little kids, there's little boys too, with hair loss. A lot of them have hair loss, have alopecia. And some days I don't feel my best. I don't love my look. I'm struggling myself because it's just the reality of my situation at the moment. And I pull up every single time I get on this Zoom to teach these kids, because if I can show them that I'm happy and strong and okay with being bald, then they are looking up to me in a way that no one can even understand, not even them, not even us. Like, it's leaving an impact and a mark on them to go on this Zoom and see someone bald that's 20 years older than them, thriving, happy, teaching, having fun, loving herself. That's leaving such an impact on them. So for a 12-year-old who has 2.something million on Instagram to just casually put on a bald cap, have her mom faint, and her mom literally verbatim say, I don't know you. My daughter's pretty. My daughter has pretty blonde hair. Stop. It's disgusting. And it's not, and it's like, where, you know nothing about being bald. So for a 12-year-old who has a crazy following of young kids to show that a mom's not recognizing them. And it's honestly, I fault the mom, because you're in your 40s, like, grow up, figure it out, open your heart, have a little empathy. Like, and her words in the YouTube video are just, it's disgusting. It's just taking away all the work that me and these moms are doing to protect their little girls. It's disgusting. It's disheartening. And these little girls that I teach are being taught to love themselves. We go around and say, what's your favorite thing about yourself? And like 9 out of 10 of them say alopecia. So they're being taught to love being bald. So then for them or even their classmates to see that bald in a bad light and in a negative
I mean,
when the girl doesn't even know anything about being
talk
bald.
About right. basic manners. I don't know. It's just some of these people, I know so many people who are so talented and who are struggling to get the kind of following that these idiots have. And it's just, in today's world, anyone can become an influencer. But really, it's how you use that power to influence people in your audience. And like, even though I don't want to blame the 12-year-old for the video, I think it has a lot to do with the parenting. And even though I'm not a parent myself, I think it's just the basics. And honestly, Christy, I was so turned off by how that thing started. I didn't even get to the point where the mother says, I don't recognize you.
I'm
just so shocked that that was even a part of the equation. So Oh my gosh. And then, so Christy, you talk about Baltourage a lot. So tell us what that is.
Yeah. So, I needed a community that I felt like myself accepted, and I needed like to feel fulfilled and around people that get me. So I used to always, like, when I would walk into a bar or whatever with me, with as a blonde and with other blonde girls, people would be like, "Oh, the Blondourage is here," and I was like thinking about a name, and I'm like, Baltourage, like, you know, an entourage or Blondourage of people is like a close knit, cool, powerful people. I'm like, there's nothing powerful, more powerful than like a group of bald women. So I'm like, that's a perfect name. And then I started creating it. And I started hosting these dance classes. I host wine nights. I host different activities for the kids. We have like a group chat, and it's just a place to like, be yourself, express yourself, feel comfortable, feel heard, feel accepted. We just had someone the other day talking about having a hard day and wishing her hair was back. And there's just nothing like talking to people who get you and get what you're going through.
And speaking of, you know, obviously in the community, there's an understanding of what is appropriate to say or ask and what is not. But are there any pet peeves? Are there things that people ask you that you think are offensive or annoying?
Oh, good question. Let me think. I don't really like when I like will take my wig off, or there's a video of me doing with my wig and without my wig, and people being like, "You still look beautiful without your wig. You still look pretty without hair." Like, no one's asking. No one's asking you. I didn't ask you if I still look pretty. Like, I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't feel like I still looked pretty, you know? Like, and why is it that you still look pretty? Like, so those, I mean, it's just like little, it's just the way that people say them. I also have pet peeves when I'm around people and my friends, and people, maybe it's something I'll grow out of, but can you not complain about your hair in front of me? Like, maybe don't complain about your hair. Maybe don't talk about how you don't love your eyebrows when you have thick, luscious, beautiful brown eyebrows. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe don't talk about that in front of me. Talk about that with anybody else. But it's still, it's like an open wound for me still. Mm-hmm. So, but people that are close to me are very aware of that, which I'm grateful for. But yeah, like, maybe talk about that with anybody else, but someone that's completely bald. Mm.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is an important question because, you know, sometimes people are probably not coming from a place of wanting to hurt you, but they're just not very self-aware. So I think this is an important message for people who are listening. You know, if you're around anyone who is, you know, who has alopecia, I think you need to be a little bit more considerate. Just like, you know, someone else, it's like eating something another person is not supposed to eat, or it's almost like teasing someone unintentionally. I don't know. I mean, there are so many different situations. I sometimes get really pissed off when people talk about certain things that I'm very sensitive about. And so it's important to understand and think about the subject matter from the other person's perspective. So thank you for sharing that.
Yep.
Christy, now, one question to you, which I'm pretty sure you've been asked before, is you're so confident in your skin. You've normalized this, and it is normal. It didn't, first of all, I don't think it needed to be normalized, because in my eyes, it's normal, right? But from the societal standpoint, of course, it needs to be normalized. Yes, right? Because I think it's natural. If it's happening to you naturally, right, it's natural. Like, there's nothing unnatural or abnormal about it, right? But are there days still when you wish your hair would grow back? Do you ever still have that?
Someone just asked me this the other day, and it's a really hard question, because I do. Like, some days I do, if I'm being honest. I just want to throw the towel in, and it could get me up emotional, but some days it's too heavy. It's too heavy to deal with. Mm-hmm. And some days I just want to not have to deal with it. I want to drop it off at the park and not pick it up, you know?
Yeah.
And then other days I feel really empowered and fulfilled that this has led me to a more fulfilled and like a different direction in my life. Mm-hmm. If I had my hair back, I think in a sense I would lose my identity all over again. I've the past 4 years, day in and day out, I've worked to get to this place mm-hmm. of loving myself bald, of creating Balterage, of having a voice in the hair loss community, and for normalizing bald women. So mm-hmm. I feel like I would lose a part of me all over again. And I mm-hmm. already lost a part of me when I lost my hair.
Wow.
But so it's a catch 22 that some days I it's too much. I can't, it feels really heavy to have this weighing on me being mm-hmm. bald and having the feeling like I need to continue to push my message, but you know, so it depends on the day, but that's a complicated answer. But
what
like,
you said, what you said, Christy, is just, it blows my mind. I mean, obviously I was expecting, I had a few things in my mind where I was like, maybe Christy will say this. Because when I'm drafting a lot of these questions, I think of potential answers and then I move to the next mm-hmm. question. This was not one of them. And I'm just like so proud of you for what you said. Aww. Like that is so huge. Thanks. It's like a whole, I don't know. It's one of those things where, oh my God, I never thought about that. But
right.
the fact that you feel that you will lose your identity all over again just goes to show how far you've come.
It's true. Thanks for that reminder, Sabrine. You're yeah. right. I have come far and I need to acknowledge that. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, that is phenomenal. I mean, that needs to be printed somewhere. We Aww. Need to do something with that.
Let's do it.
I know. But wow, I mean, this was truly a very information-packed, kick-ass conversation. You know, I think I was just so tempted to, you know, have something for each touch point in your journey, just because I feel like interviews can be very rushed up and not people don't really pay a lot of attention to the little details that really make who you are today, right? So, you know, unfortunately, we've reached the end of time, which I don't even know where did it go? I don't even, right? So, Christy, in this last section, which is typically where we share advice or wisdom, right? What advice do you have for those who've been recently diagnosed with alopecia, right? What concrete steps can they take now to manage it better? And also, what advice do you have for parents or partners of individuals with alopecia? How can they be supportive and encouraging?
Yeah, that's great. So for people with alopecia, my advice would be like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. You're allowed to be sad. You're allowed to be upset. It is a traumatic loss to lose your hair. It's not like you lose your hair and you're like, okay, now I'm bald. Let's do this. Like, you're allowed to be sad. So I would say my advice is be there for yourself, have your own back, and find something every day to be grateful for and something that you love about yourself. Because although this exterior thing you're losing, you do still, I know that you still have stuff to be grateful for and something, you've got to find something to love yourself to get you through the hardest part of when the hair is falling out. So that would be my advice. Like, always try to remember there's something to be grateful for and there's something to love about yourself. And that my advice is that you're going to be okay. It's going to suck for a minute. It's going to be extremely hard, but mm-hmm. you're going to be okay in the end. You're going to be okay. And then my advice for parents or partners with people who have alopecia is to be a listener. Sit there and listen, because sometimes that's all someone who is losing their hair needs. It's so confusing to lose your hair. You're like, why is this happening? Who am I? What do I look like? Why am I happy today and sad tomorrow? Like, it's confusing. So if we can have people who just sit there and listen to like all the rigmarole that we want to talk about with this, mm-hmm. There's nothing like it. And then if you're a parent and you're experiencing this with your child, like we talked about before, don't put it on them that you're trying to fix this. Like, maybe behind closed doors and in the privacy of your bedroom, maybe research if that's where you're at, but don't show your kid that you need to constantly change, right. fix. And maybe subtly reminds them, not over the top and make them feel like they're different, but subtly reminds them that they're amazing, that they're powerful, that they're beautiful, that they're perfect, that you love them. Because a parent's love. There's nothing like that. Like, even still, gratefully to this day, when my mom like tells me how much she loves me and that she believes in me and all those her words from a mom, like, it's just really, really, really lifts me up and reminds me mm-hmm. of my power. So your words as a parent, like, don't go unnoticed.
Yep. I agree 100%. Kids remember everything. And even if they, if you think that they're not listening, when they grow up, all of that comes back. So you have to be really mindful in general about what you say to your kids, because that's what shapes their thinking, their mind. So, yeah, I mean, Christy, what an honor. I mean, I'm overwhelmed with joy that we were able to do this, and you have no idea how much this means to me. And honestly, like, huge shout out to Sydney for introducing me to your world.
Yes.
Just, you know, I totally understand why she's obsessed with, you know, Christy's world and the amazingness that comes with it. And so please keep doing what you do. I think the world really needs it. And I think, you know, if someone has alopecia or not, you're just really redefining the beauty standards, not just for, you know, I think beauty in general is very skewed the way that the media looks at it. And so we need to redefine that, not just as people who have alopecia, but as women, as a community, right? So that's that. And to all the listeners who tuned in, thank you for sticking around. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your support. If you love this episode, make sure that you rate and review The Lavender Fix and join the mailing list so you don't miss any of the future episodes. The link is always in my Instagram bio. I will also include all information to Christy, her site, her Instagram in the description of this episode. So please check all her work out. And as always, I will see you guys next week. Till then, chin up. Yeah.